Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter, Brian Lynn, and Anna Mateo. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
North Korea has canceled its yearly anti-United States demonstration. The Associated Press reports that the event, in which people living in the capital, Pyongyang, wave flags and shout anti-U.S. messages, will not be held. Last year's event reportedly involved 100,000 demonstrators. Officials did not release an official statement about the decision, but AP reporters confirmed Monday that it would not be held. North Korea has reduced anti-U.S. messages over the past several months. North Korean media usually are strongly critical of the U.S., especially around the anniversary date of the beginning of the Korean War. June 25th marks the 68th year since the beginning of the Korean War. Many observances took place in South Korea involving officials, including South Korean President Moon Jae-in. North Korean state media have shown many reports, photographs, and videos of the recent meeting between the country's leader and the U.S. president. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un met with U.S. President Donald Trump in Singapore on June 12th. The two signed a document calling for, among other things, efforts to remove nuclear weapons from the Korean Peninsula. Also, North and South Korean officials met last week over the issue of families separated by the Korean War. Officials agreed to permit a reunion of 100 separated family members to meet on August 20th to 26th at the Mount Kumgang area in North Korea. However, South Korean media criticized the small number of Koreans included. The Korea Times called on North Korea to pay more attention to humanitarian issues. The Korean Herald said the North should show a more active and forward-looking attitude. Millions of Korean families were forced apart by the division of the country at the end of World War II and the Korean War. The Ministry of Unification says there are now about 56,000 registered separated family members in South Korea. But almost all are over 70 years old, and each year there are fewer survivors. The last inter-Korean family reunion took place in 2015. It involved 200 families from each side. And on Sunday, U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis said he is hopeful North Korea would soon return the remains of U.S. service members killed during the Korean War. North Korea has already returned the remains of over 200 U.S. soldiers. Mattis is on a trip to Asia in which he will visit Japan, South Korea, and China. I'm Mario Ritter.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is preparing to extend his rule and take on new powers after his victory in elections on Sunday. His ruling AK Party and their allies won a majority in Turkey's parliament in the voting. Electoral officials declared Erdogan the winner of the presidential election. Erdogan's main opponent, Muharrem İnce, admitted defeat, but called the vote unjust. Under the new presidential system, the prime minister's position no longer exists, and executive powers are given to the president, who rules with limited checks and balances. As president, Erdogan himself can appoint ministers and vice presidents, approve declarations, propose a budget, and decide on security policies, all without parliamentary approval. The Turkish president has controlled the country's politics for the past 15 years. Critics have accused him of increasingly taking authoritarian actions. But supporters love Erdogan for bringing economic growth and security. Turkey's money, the lira, rose in value on Monday with his victory. Erdogan's victory could also add to Turkey's division with the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Western countries are concerned about Turkish ties with Russia. On Monday, Russian President Vladimir Putin was one of the first world leaders to congratulate Erdogan on his victory. In his victory speech, Erdogan set a goal of making Turkey one of the world's top 10 economies by 2023, the 100th anniversary of the Turkish Republic. He also promised a more determined fight against Kurdish rebels and a movement reportedly led by U.S.-based cleric Fethullah Gulen. Erdogan has accused the clergyman of organizing a plot to overthrow his government. Gulen denies involvement. Turkish forces have arrested 50,000 people since the failed overthrow attempt in 2016. More than 110,000 government workers have also been dismissed under a state of emergency after the coup. The European Union said it hoped Erdogan would remain a committed partner for the EU on major issues of common interest, such as immigration, security, and the fight against terrorism. Luxembourg's foreign minister, Jean Asselborn, noted on Monday it is now up to Erdogan to decide whether Turkey's relations with the EU will improve. I'm Brian Lynn.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. The next superhero that saves the world may not be strong, powerful, or good-looking. In fact, that hero may be a wriggling, squirming, faceless creature. It may be a maggot. Maggots are the soft-bodied, not fully developed larvae of flies or other insects. Many people feel sick by simply hearing the word maggot, let alone seeing them. To them, the larvae are simply, in a word, gross. This yuck factor is not stopping scientists around the world. Many are studying how one of the planet's grossest creatures could help humankind. Wired magazine reports that companies are using maggots to eat natural waste. Its story explains that after the maggots clean up waste, they may become useful as animal feed or even biofuel. BioCycle is a business specializing in renewable energy and recycling organic materials. The company's website notes that black soldier flies are perfect to use for environmental purposes. The flies eat anything, and a lot of it. Their larvae are not harmful to crops or other creatures. They live for only a short time, during which they only drink a little water and seem to be mainly concerned with mating. But destroying waste, feeding animals, and fueling vehicles may not be the greatest strength of the lowly maggot. In laboratory tests, maggots seem able to fight diseases that have become resistant to antibiotics. For years, doctors used maggots to clear dead tissue from wounds. Medical historians claim that doctors in Napoleon's army used maggots to do just that. And during World War I, an American doctor, William Baer, took note that wounds with maggots healed better. But then penicillin and other antibiotics came along. So doctors stopped using maggots. Now, however, some germs have mutated. The resulting superbugs are threatening the effectiveness of our most powerful drugs. Researchers in Wales say maggot secretions, the substances they naturally produce, may be able to fight germs that have built up a resistance to antibiotics. To make things even grosser, these scientists are not interested in all maggots, just the ones that eat dead tissue. Maggots can eat many different things. The University of Swansea researchers, however, studied only maggots that eat dead or necrotic tissue. As if maggots eating dead tissue isn't gross enough, what they secrete or spit up could be a wonder drug. Yamini Nigam is a professor with Swansea University in Wales. She says her team was surprised to learn that the substances that maggots produce are effective against bacteria.
To our surprise, we found that we had excellent antibacterial activity in certain fractions, in certain samples of maggot secretions. So that's a new hope for a novel new antibiotic that we're hoping to one day find from the maggot secretions.
She says the maggots used in this study were clean and free from living organisms. In other words, they were the best maggots on the market.
The clinical maggot we use, which is sterile, clean, clinical grade, can only eat dead tissue. People need to be reassured about that.
The researchers take sterile maggots and add water. The maggots produce their secretions in the water. Nigam notes that the maggot secretions are full of molecules that can help us heal. She gets very excited when she talks about maggots.
their little factories producing all these molecules, the antibacterial molecules, the antifungal molecule, the pro-wound healing molecules. They're doing all that as well as digesting away the dead necrotic tissue, which again we've known that they do that by secreting a series of enzymes that they let out of their body, and those enzymes digest all the dead infected flesh away.
The Swansea University team has named one of these healing molecules. They are calling it ceratocin. If it works, people may not be so grossed out by maggots in the future. Maybe. In 2017, Nigam asked a group of British health workers if they would use maggots on a patient. Only 30% said they would. But she is not giving up. She believes so strongly in the healing power of maggots that she launched a Love a Maggot campaign at the university. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Anna Mateo.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember with Shirley Griffith. We begin the story of President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. In 1932, Americans were tired of the policies of Republican President Herbert Hoover. They thought Hoover had done too little to fight the depression that was crushing the economy. They gave a big victory to Franklin Roosevelt and his Democrats in the elections that year. Roosevelt believed that the federal government should do more to help average Americans. The election brought hope to many Americans in the autumn of 1932. But Roosevelt did not become president until March of 1933, 4 months after the election. And those months saw the American economy fall to its lowest level in the history of the nation.
President Hoover tried to arrange a World Economic Conference, and he called on President-elect Roosevelt to join him in making conservative statements in support of business. Roosevelt refused. He did not think it was correct to begin acting like a president until he actually became the president. He did not want to tie himself to policies that the voters had just rejected. Congress, controlled by Democrats, also refused to help Hoover.
It was a strange period, a season of uncertainty and anger. The economy was worse than ever. The lines of people waiting for food were longer than before. Angry mobs of farmers were gathering in the countryside. And the politicians in Washington seemed unable to work together to end the crisis. Hoover said, "We are at the end of our rope. There is nothing more we can do." And across the country, Americans waited, worried, uncertain, afraid. What would the new president do?
The new president was 51 years old. His family name was well known to the American public. Theodore Roosevelt, a distant family member, had served as one of America's greatest presidents 30 years earlier. Franklin Roosevelt was born to a rich and important New York family. He went to the best schools, Groton, Harvard, and Columbia Law School. In 1910, he won election to the New York State Legislature. He showed great intelligence and political understanding as a state senator and worked hard for other Democratic candidates. Franklin Roosevelt next served as Assistant Secretary of the Navy under President Woodrow Wilson. And in 1920, he was the Democratic Party's unsuccessful candidate for vice president.
The next year, Roosevelt suffered a personal tragedy. He was sailing during a holiday with his family. Suddenly, his body became cold. He felt severe pain in his back and legs. Doctors came, but the pain got worse. For weeks, Roosevelt was forced to lie on his back. Finally, doctors discovered that Roosevelt was a victim of polio. He lost control of his legs because of the disease. He would never walk again. Roosevelt had always been an active man who loved sports, but now he would have to live with a wheelchair. All of his money and fame could not get him back the strength in his legs.
Many Americans thought the illness would end Roosevelt's political dreams, but they were wrong. He showed an inner strength that people had never seen in him before. Roosevelt ran as the Democratic candidate for governor of New York State in 1928. He won by a small number of votes. 2 years later, the voters of New York re-elected Roosevelt, and they cheered his creative efforts to help citizens of the state who were suffering from the Great Depression.
Franklin Roosevelt always appeared strong and friendly in public. He loved to laugh and enjoy life. But his happy face hid a strong will. Throughout his life, Roosevelt worked to improve life for the common man. And he was willing to use the power of government to do this. He thought the government had the power and responsibility to improve the life of its citizens.
Roosevelt believed deeply in this, but he was less certain about the best way to do it. Above all, we must try something, he said, during the presidential campaign of 1932. Roosevelt believed that the country demanded creative experimentation. Americans in large numbers across the country voted for Roosevelt in 1932. They supported his calls for action to end the Depression. But no one was really sure just what this new president from New York, this man unable to walk, would really do after he entered the White House.
Inauguration Day in 1933 began with clouds and a dark sky. Roosevelt went to church in the morning, and then he drove with President Hoover from the White House to the Capitol, the building where Congress meets. Roosevelt tried to talk with Hoover as they drove, but Hoover said little. He just waved without emotion at the crowd. The two men arrived at the Capitol. A huge crowd of people waited. Millions more Americans listened to a radio broadcast of the ceremony. The Chief Justice of the United States, Charles Evans Hughes, gave the oath of office to Roosevelt. And then Americans waited to hear
what the nation's 32nd president would say. He told them he was sure they expected him to speak openly and honestly about the situation facing the country. He told them that their great nation would survive as it had survived in the past, that it would recover and become rich again. He talked about the danger of fear, a nameless fear that blocked efforts to move forward. And he talked about Americans giving their support to honest, active leadership in every dark hour of their history. Here is some of Roosevelt's inaugural address in his own words.
This great nation will endure as it has endured, will revive and will prosper. So first of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror, which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance.
Roosevelt's words caught the emotions of the crowd. He seemed sure of himself. He promised leadership. His whole style was different from the empty promises of wealth offered by President Hoover.
Happiness lies not in the mere possession of money. It lies in the joy of achievement, in the thrill of creative effort, the joy, the moral stimulation of work, no longer must be forgotten in the mad chase of evanescent profit.
These dark days, my friends, will be worth all they cost us.
If they teach us that our true destiny is not to be ministered unto, but to minister to ourselves, to our fellow men.
Roosevelt said that the most important need was to put people back to work. And he said the federal government would have to take an active part in creating jobs. Roosevelt said there were many ways to help the nation recover. But, he said, it would never be helped just by talking about it. We must act, he said, and act quickly.
Roosevelt had a strong and serious look on his face. He told the crowd that all the necessary action was possible under the American system of government. But he warned that Congress must cooperate with him to get the nation moving again. Then, his speech finished, Roosevelt waved to the crowd and smiled. Herbert Hoover shook his hand and left. Roosevelt rode alone through the huge crowds back to the White House, and he immediately began a series of conferences.
Roosevelt's inauguration speech of 1933 was one of the most powerful and important speeches in American history. Roosevelt's speech was like an ocean wave that washes away one period of history and brings in a new one. The president seemed strong. He gave people hope. The new president promised the American people action. And action came quickly. During the next 3 months, Roosevelt and the Democrats would pass more major new programs than the nation had seen in many years.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.